Hello and welcome to Team White. I'm Alex Linder here in Nîmes. And today we have with us Jan, as always, in South Africa. And we're delighted to have back Alison Chablot from the UK, where she is currently not in jail and possibly working on a double album about Jews to be revealed in one fell swoop. Now, that's just a bad joke for me. What do you say, Alison? Great to have you here with us.
Thank you. Hi, Alex. Hi, Jan. Hi, everybody. I'm not working on a double album. It already exists. It needs to be, you know, properly packaged. And
You and Elton John teamed up, huh?
Well, kind of. No, it was me and Mr. Menuhin. You know, son of probably one of the most world's most famous musicians of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. It's Mr. Menuhin and I teamed up, and Germaine. I mustn't forget my French, wonderful French co-author Germaine. He's also out of prison and busily helping his preferred candidate in the French presidential elections, which of course coming up in May. Hmm. I'm doing all right, waiting for just...
We wanted to hear your own personal situation regarding the courts and all
yes.
that.
I'm not sure when we spoke the last time. In fact, 2021, about a year ago, 2021, the 31st of March, I was finally sent to prison. It's called a breach trial. They accused me of breaching my original suspended sentence for causing gross offence by posting satirical songs on the internet. And that was in 2018. I had a 2-year suspended prison sentence with that original trial. And they just kept coming after me and after me. I did win one appeal. They'd already tried to breach me for stuff that was on my website. I won that. But then they brought... separate charges against me for two other things, some things that I'd said on radio podcasts, a couple of things that I said that I'm obviously not going to repeat, but it's all over the news. I was sent to prison. It was the 31st of March. That was the Friday of the Easter weekend, or the Thursday of the Easter weekend. I was jailed for 9 weeks, and then I was on license for a further 9 weeks, but I appealed. I did go against my lawyer's advice, but I really do have nothing to lose. I appealed in the Crown Court, and there my sentence was reimposed. They gave me an extra 7 weeks, and I had to start the entire license period again from the beginning. So in all, it was about 9 months, four inside prison and five on license with no internet, no posting online, no social media, as if I was some kind of paedophile, you know, or terrorist. But anyway, that's over. It's now I'm kind of like easing my way back in because, as I said to Jan when at the beginning, it seems quite a long time since I've actually, you know, spoken to somebody. Yes, of course I have, but. It takes a while to get back to normal, especially after the incarceration. And
these creeps are stealing her life from her for nothing more than she wants to write about whatever subject she wants. And then they prate endlessly and create these world wars. Oh, we're a democracy. This is the democracy they're trying to spread, where a woman is stuck in jail for writing a song. Okay. That's what they mean by democracy. It's really irritating. And I mean, you only have so much life, and by God, when you get to be, we're all, you know, at least middle-aged, you know, 50s. You really appreciate the value that time is the biggest thing you've got. And you don't feel that when you're young. You who listening might be young, but boy, you feel that when you're older. And I mean, this is absolutely pathetic.
Yeah. And they just keep the pressure on. 2 years ago, another song, in some private thing. It wasn't public at all. This got fished up and, well, I'm also being done for this. They've messed about. This has been going for 2 years. I had 8 policemen come around. They raided my house. They took all the computers and all the phones that they could find. Quite a lot of them didn't even belong to me. And they still got all these computers. They then eventually charged me with racial incitement. Now, that's got a more serious penalty. I think you can go racial harassment, religious harassment. And then they tried to do it for racial incitement. In fact, they'd forgotten to even ask the consent of the Attorney General. And then I was in prison during my first stay in prison last year. And I was taken to court for this new song. And they dropped the more serious charge, which would have taken place in front of the jury. You see, they dropped the more serious charge, where I did have a much better chance of acquittal, and brought another, it's called Section 127, sending or causing to be sent a grossly offensive message. So it's just about hurting people's feelings. You know, nobody, I didn't ask anybody to listen to these songs. My accuser came along and clicked play, and that was it. Apparently I'm inciting genocide or something, or
yeah,
harassing the person who's complaining. I can't really say anything about the song. I went to court in prison and found out that the charge had been dropped. I mean, that it's really easy to bully somebody when they're in prison. They really went for me that day. It was in the morning. You get taken to video call center, in the prison guard, and they tell you where to go. I had a couple of minutes with my barrister, Adrian Davis, before I went into this video room. And he told me, they're dropping the charge. You've got two choices. You can either plead guilty and get your sentence done while you're still here, or you can plead not guilty. So I went, and I just couldn't hear. Then I went into the room thinking, oh, great, but, I would have preferred a jury. Anyway, I just couldn't hear what was being said in the court. It was dreadful. It's bad enough when you're in there. I reckon it's just such poor quality, and they haven't got any money to replace the equipment. It's, I don't know, 3 decades old or whatever. But I couldn't hear. And the guard said, oh, yes, I agree, the sound is bad. He went away. The judge said, if you can't hear, I'm going to get you in a prison van and bring you to court in person. And suddenly the guards saying, oh, no, the sound is good. Anyway, they did. That's what they did. At 3 p.m., they said, right, you're coming to court. 3 p.m., they commissioned this prison bus, really horrible old prison bus with really hard seats, really uncomfortable. A driver and a security guard, just little old me in this big prison van for, I don't know, four or five prisoners, driven the hour to the court. But by the time I got there, the court had closed to the public. It was past 4:30. When I got in, it was a black guard, and then it's Serco, the company who runs everything. He said, you must be really important. The judge said, this woman is coming into court today. They were much nicer to me in person, and they actually did read out the charge to me, and I pled not guilty. And since then, there was another hearing in last August. There's been about 4 judges so far, including the same one who originally sentenced me back in 2018. It's like a merry-go-round. And now we've got a new judge called Mrs. Tempia. In fact, the complainant has been too ill to appear twice now. The first time she was in hospital, and the second time she had COVID. That was last month. So the trial's been adjourned to the April the 7th. And so they just want to keep the pressure up. And it seems unlikely. Everybody agreed in court, my barrister, her barrister, and the judge, that it was unlikely that the victim was well enough, would be well enough to appear. And in that case, the Crown would have to put her evidence as hearsay evidence or dismiss the case. There is another expert witness that they've got, some professor from some Mac University. And he's written a 28-page report explaining why it would be grossly offensive, et cetera, et cetera. But the details of that, I wait until there is some kind of at least a trial. which should at least, you know, I'm not sure how they're going to handle it if it, you know, all the details do come out of how and why this song was written and who it is in fact about. They'll try and drag it out much longer, or, you know, do me for something.
Yeah, and that's part of the punishment is just, you know, this stuff's endlessly hanging over your head. You want to go about your life and write what you want to write, and it's not really their business what you write. It's only, you know, yours and the audience's. And this is what we're reduced to in these countries, you know, now.
The worst thing, Alex, and I've been thinking about this today. I think I did tell Jan maybe around Christmas, but when I was sent back to prison in August for the second 7 weeks, mm-hmm. He said to me, my counsel, you know, you go down after being found guilty. And he said to me, well, I think there's two issues, Alison, while you're being punished so severely. And the first is, well, perhaps, you know, inappropriate language, Alison. And the second is that is the split with the British nationalists, with Heritage and Destiny and Michel Renouf. That's why they, you know, your support was withdrawn, and therefore you were easy prey. So really, you know, you can see these white nationalist groups, far right groups in the UK, Heritage and Destiny, I'm not really sure what kind of following they have. A lot of older people, perhaps, you know, got pensions, etc. Not so much younger ones. That's a group now called Patriotic Alternative. But these groups, they've basically tried to finish off. Ever since I went on trial in 2018 for the first time, these people, my own supposedly my own kinfolk and my own people and supposed nationalists, have been trying to finish the job that was started a few years previously by militant Zionist supremacists.
Yeah, that's, you know,
this is what people can realize, that, you know, it's a business. The main anti-fascist group in the UK, Hope Not Hate, published a report yesterday. In fact, it's a reprint of what they said last year. They talk about Tommy Robinson, and then they talk about Holocaust deniers, and it's always David Irving, Michel Renouf, Nick Colostrom, Alison Chablot, and it's the same as last year. They, you know, a few sentences have changed, but it's the same. If Hope Not Hate didn't publish these regular reports and then pass them out to friends in the media and to all their friends in Westminster, then groups like Patriotic Alternative would have the socio-political clout of the Women's Institute or the Girl Guides. I mean, you know, they're doing good grassroots work, but they're doing the same things that loads of other groups are already doing. In groups of pensioners, they get together and pick up litter in their towns. It's a great shame that certain people are allowed, you know, people say it's stupid. They're so moronic and thick, you know, that they believe that they have the support of an actual, you know, aristocrat. And failure to identify a fake posh English accent, etc. Failure to identify, you know, somebody who's only interested in selling themselves rather than the cause that they claim to represent. Mm-hmm. Then these fakes will be able to continue to promote themselves, and, you know, they can leave a digital trace, like those who want to set the Holocaust narrative in stone. Certain people also want to revise their own history and set that, their version of their own history, in stone. it's wearisome, and it's just a joke. I mean, they're never going to be able to form a political party, and even if they do, all they achieve is to split all the other tiny little joke nationalist parties that already exist, meaning that, you know, more certainty that either one of the two big parties get back in. In England, people vote for the party that they hate the least. That's how it works. There's no political home for nationalists in the UK. Nothing serious.
It's just illegal to say anything that would matter, is what it seems like. I mean, and it's that way in most of Western Europe.
Yeah, you see, my case has allowed the Crown to go after quite a few of my actual supporters, and for a couple of Facebook posts, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Graham Hart, you'll know about him. He pleaded guilty. He's a grandfather. I'm sure that, you know, and he was facing years in jail for rants with Fetcho.
I don't know anyone in the UK who I've known. They were all harassed by, I mean, Simon Shepherd was driven. He was the first one I really recall, and he wrote all kinds of stuff. And he has been out of it for, maybe, I know you know him and know him over there, but I mean, he was pretty big stuff 20 years ago.
He's back in prison, I think. They put him back in prison also for a breach of something.
Him and his buddy, who used to write Luco for, maybe it was a fake name, but wrote really, really good stuff. Some excellent, excellent essays and satire. And you know, they get imprisoned and stolen from them. I don't know how you get by in the UK. I really don't. I mean, it's bad enough, in America, but you still have formal legal freedom. I mean, you just get everything ripped off from you. But
yeah, that's why America is worth supporting for that constitution.
Yeah, I mean, they can't really throw you in jail for what you say, but they will use it against you in a sort of more of a passive way, and they will aggressively socially stigmatize you and squeeze you out of your bank account and all that. But anything else to say on the personal front? I really wanted to hear or Jan may have a question. I wanted to hear your view of this Russian, I guess the main subject for today would be the Russian Ukrainian deal. And I wanted to hear what you see on that from UK to turn away from your own stuff, but not if you have something more to say about it.
No.
It's great to hear an update on that. I assume you were still under a ban for speaking, basically.
No, I can still speak. It's just like getting used to it again. And of course, I've got this further case I'm still kind of on probation. So you have to be of good behavior, blah, blah, blah. That lasts till September. So I can't publish my latest song, but if I went abroad, I could do that. You see, it's just so ridiculous. Anyway, they allowed my case allowed the Crown to go after these other people.
Yeah. So they want to undercut any money that you got coming to you. They always go after the money first, just like they're doing with Russia.
Yeah, and people are getting threatened with jail sentence for writing angry letters with conspiracy theories to their members of parliament. And it's the aides who read these letters, and then the aides, they'll go whining to the disciplinary, and they'll say, "Oh no, this threatening letter." Some Alan Sugar, do you know him? Alan Sugar.
I don't know him.
The Apprentice. He does the English version of The Apprentice on TV. He got a letter from some old man, man is like, he was put in jail. He was like 70-odd, and this man's been sent to jail for an angry letter.
So it's just overtly
Alan Sugar, who's a Jew. Yeah. Yes, yeah.
I knew there was a Sugar in America that used to be in all the different magazines. He was like a boxing guy, and he was a Jew. Yeah, that's a Jew name, Sugar.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Ukraine, I don't feel like I've really, got much of a bun in this fight. And I've been watching, on the social media, I've been watching RT as well. Someone gave me a link to watch RT. But I've been just completely sickened by the sycophancy of the members of parliament who received Volodymyr Zelensky the other day. I think he's the first leader of a nation to ever address the House of Commons in that way.
They do that in the USA and ever Netanyahu. They do more standing ovations than for Stalin.
Yeah, it's just like
every
that.
10 seconds, disgusting.
Apparently, some of the military have gone AWOL and gone off to fight. in Ukraine.
Wow.
I just saw a quick trending on Twitter about that the other day. Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? The High Court took some far-right Israeli groups that were funding these Azov battalions.
Mm-hmm.
They were taken to court. And then Putin is saying, oh, it's denazification, yet no. The Ukrainians of the East were the same people. And the leftists on Twitter have been screeching about refugees, you know, refugees, we need to open our borders because Priti Patel is trying to play hardcore with the refugees. But now if they've got a passport, they can apply for a visa, Ukrainian refugees. And the European Union is now putting sanctions on Poland and Hungary. For some, it's
what?
Maybe not quite related to the war. Everything is being twisted in the media, everything on both sides. The way that, I mean, somebody said an interesting thing yesterday. We saw Gab in, I think it's 2017 or 2018, Gab platformed by Apple, by Google, by the mm-hmm. app stores. Well, now they've done the same thing to a whole country. You know, they've completely deplatformed Russia.
Yeah, they're trying.
Russia. The guy on RT, the journalist, was arguing that it was a good move on Russia's part to then ban Facebook. It just seems to me that they're all part of the plot, Putin and Zelensky.
Yeah, well.
And it's just another, you know, a throw of the dice to ensure that the chaos continues and worsens.
Oh, they're trying to. Go ahead, Jan.
If I may just add something in. From what I picked up the other day when I was watching something from America, it looks to me like America actually wants to get rid of Putin. That's actually what they are aiming for here. They want the overthrow of Putin. I picked that up the other day.
They want a revolution in Russia.
Yes,
all this is driven by the Jews in the USA called neocons, who have never really been out of any of these administrations. Newland is a typical example. They want a global revolution. They trace back to Trotsky. They're trying to foment a global revolution. They fomented a revolution in Ukraine in 2014, and they've had their stooges put in. And now, in just the last 2 days, we found, oh, there's all these biological warfare labs, just like this crap they were working on in China that built it in COVID. Same stuff in multiple. I mean, China said there's literally dozens of these labs all over the world, and at least either 12 to 25 or something in Ukraine directly. So this is the reason Putin acted. It's not like Putin is a white nationalist or completely free of bad things, but he's not on board with all of their neocon social policy of promoting, you know, globo homo, as we call it these days. And so, yeah, they would like to do a color revolution in Russia. What they're doing is destabilizing Russia from around its perimeter. That's why they pushed against their express word, we will never move NATO an inch east, which they said back under, I think it was Bush. They moved it all the way up to Russia's borders as much as they could, and Ukraine would be the last step when it's right on their border. And Putin has said for 8 years, he's been, hey, we're not going to allow this. We're not going to allow you to, you know, do a Bay of Pigs and station these missiles right next to us, let alone these biological warfare labs. And so finally, they refuse to give any respect to his rational, consistent problem that he had. They refuse to address it. So finally said, all right, I'm going in. That's my read on it. And people try to make it into, it's not an absolute black or white, but in terms of who wins this, it more or less is. It's better if Russia keeps these neocon, these dirty global revolutionaries out of Ukraine. I think it'll work out okay. But yeah, in response, as Allison started to get into, they have absolutely done everything they could to deplatform Russia as a country. And as Jan and I were talking about before the show, I mean, the good thing that can come out of this is it's really going to strengthen the coming financial revolution. So as they print money in all these countries to fund war, Bitcoin or some other financial system outside of SWIFT is going to come into view. And then through the back way, through Russia and China and India and Iran and all these people that these neocons have not been able to foment revolution in, if they come together, you know, what is it, the Belt and Roads Initiative, the New Silk Road or whatever, all these people who are more financially solvent and are more sane, just to use a simple word, if they come together and start using Bitcoin and the rest of this stuff, it's very, very good. That's the good thing that can come out of this war, because I don't think the neocons can ultimately win it. Already in the United States, we're seeing just massive import. I mean, every utility bill I got in the last month was considerably higher. I mean, I barely got the heat on in my house. And it was an absurd amount. It was an absurd for how warm or how cold I keep it. Gas is the single biggest thing. Oil, right? Now, just the last like 24 hours, okay, they're going to completely ban oil from Russia. And we get, I don't know what, but it's tens of percent of our oil comes from Russia, maybe 40%. I could be wrong about that. I should know that, but I don't. But they refused to open it up for drilling. Trump had left him in a good position. We have all this gas and oil accessible in America and Canada and North America. Biden canceled the pipeline. So they're just completely fucking over the basic white people who built and maintain America and letting the blacks run nuts and burn stuff down and kill people. Literally, in most of these, they're not even enforcing any kind of laws against theft. While we hear this woman talk about being thrown in jail and harassed legally for half a decade or more in the UK for writing a goddamn song, they're letting blacks walk into Target and CVS, steal all kinds of stuff and just leave, or just punch people and attack them. Nothing happens in New York or San Francisco. You can be a bum and live on the street, shit on things and attack people. It's absolutely going insane. And so, you know, at least Putin is, as the oil and the gas prices go up, I mean, my God, now I just have an average sort of old car, sedan car. It's costing over $50 to fill it up, and it's not going back down. It's now gas is the highest it's ever been, over $4 on average across the U.S. I'm in a cheaper type place, but it's still over like $3.50 here. Check. So they're going to make life. Just supposedly 64% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. So there ain't no excess of money. The people are being made homeless. They're being shoved into trailer parks. I mean, just everything they're doing is immiserating the basic white people that we're defending with Team White.
And all the politicians are all in love with this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just extraordinary what's going on. Extraordinary.
Well, he Zelensky is a Jew, and he's just another one of their on Team Jew. I would say he was a puppet of the Jew, but he's on that side, and they're trying to get in all that freaking garbage. I posted a link to a video where he's dancing around promoting, making fun of Cossacks, essentially the way that Borat character, that Jew from Sasha Cohen or whatever from the UK would do. You know, oh, it's cool for him. And here's another in relation to Allison. Here's this Jew who comes over to the U.S. and makes all these films pretending to be a Kazakhstani in front of all the right-wing Republican, conservative, rural people. But he also at the same time goes to the ADL and calls for people like Allison to be thrown in jail. And he honestly believes Jews should be able to satirize others, but no one should be able to say a word critical of Jews. This is how it is. Sacha Baron Cohen, right? Yes, or whatever.
Only ever praiseworthy.
So we can point out double standards all day long. They don't care. That's how they do it. That's their dual code. And they will absolutely drive us into the ground until we get serious. Well, here, Putin is not a white nationalist, but he's values. We're opposed to all this homosexual garbage. And they also don't want chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons 2 minutes away or 3 minutes away from Moscow, as they supposedly would be. So that's what's going on. So Putin is very clear who we would hope will win this, even though he is certainly not a racialist.
Yeah, I heard.
But yeah, they're trying to foment revolution. The closer they are to Russia, then they foment. What they've been doing is attacking actual Russians inside Russia. And as Allison said, these are more or less the same people. Okay, it's Russians, basically. And yeah, some others, but they're basically the same people. And they've been fomenting revolution and bombing into Donbass, into actual Russia. And Russia has a problem with people coming in from the Central Republics. And they're fomenting revolution and terror through there. And Putin has said in the speech he gave most recently that was or within the last week, where he really laid out his reasons. He says, like, look, we know how long and hard we had to fight to suppress all this terrorist garbage that was coming from that area. And that's all fomented and led by the CIA and these goddamn Jews called neocons who operate USA's foreign policy. Victoria Nuland, right? So it's Jews controlling the USA. For basically the sole cause of international problems is the crap that they're doing. Okay, well, as I was saying about Russia, anyway, the good that might come out of this is the neocons are set back. And as long as they keep having setbacks, their coalition will fail. Because the USA is falling apart financially, and I think I talked a little about how the inflation is just terrible. But we want to see Bitcoin come out of this. We're telling you people, there's only 21 million Bitcoin. Get some Bitcoin. Even just a little bit matters. Get into this. Because it'd be the alternative structure that grows up next to the one that's going down in a spiral into the ground. But anyway, Jan, what do you see in South Africa in relation to Russia and Ukraine?
Yeah, very interesting, Alex. I was initially interested in the Ukraine war, not because of who's right or who's wrong. I'm interested in warfare, and I was very, very fascinated when this thing started and they were saying that Russia's going to be knocking out Ukraine in a couple of days. The first few days I was following this as much as I could, and I was very interested in the first 3 days to see if the Russians are going to take Kiev, because that's the capital. And my particular interest, because this is a survival issue for whites, is warfare in cities, because that seems to be the place where the white right and whites are very freaked out. And here in South Africa, it's a topic of racial survival discussion that I've had for years about, if we fight the blacks, where are we going to fight them? How are we going to fight them? And to my horror, all the whites and the white right all want to run away from the cities. And I actually looked into this in the early days when I started my website. And I looked at the military history, and I came to the conclusion that if there's one place where whites should fight, it is in cities. We must stop running away from cities. Cities are the place to fight, even if you're outnumbered. So I was very fascinated with this Russian move into Kiev. And I was thinking to myself that the Ukrainians, even though they don't have the military power of the Russians, I was looking at Kiev. It's got 2.8 million people, huge city, lots of infrastructure. I was saying to myself, I actually wrote an analysis, and I said that, you know what, if the Ukrainians dig in and they fight in the city, they could actually hold the Russians off. They should be able to hold the Russians off, even if the Russians come with all-out weaponry. And that was my original interest. The first 3 days I was following this like crazy, because it looked like the Russians were going to take Kiev. And by the way, all these places that they're fighting now are places where the Germans were fighting in World War II. And there are names that are coming up that just a few weeks before I'd been reading about Guderian's memoirs. They were talking about the town of Konotop. Konotop is a place where the Germans fought a lot. It was an important little place. But anyway, I was very fascinated by this, not too worried about the politics and the fact that whites are killing whites yet again. But what then really grabbed me was when I saw that the Russian army seems to be slowing down. Things seem to be going wrong. And that these Russian forces are moving to Kiev, and then you don't hear about them ever again. You hear nothing. They're Russians. They're on the outskirts of Kiev, and then it's like they're gone. And then another bunch are coming. So the thing that I was then fascinated with, because I want to tell you another thing about warfare, is that in military history, if you attack somebody and it's a surprise attack, and this is very important for, especially for us in South Africa for survival purposes. If somebody comes at you and they hit you with everything in a total surprise attack, there is a well-measured phenomena of, let's call it, shock and awe. But the fact is, if you are hit on day one, people are in a total state of panic. They don't know what to do. By day two, they are feeling better about it. By day three, they've almost recovered. So you go through a period of dysfunctionality and shock for about 3 days. So I was very fascinated to watch how do the Ukrainians survive the 3 days, and are they still going to be able to exist with Kiev on the fourth day? And I wrote a whole analysis and I put it up to say that, you know, everyone's saying Ukraine can fall, but if they dig in Kiev, they could actually hold out for weeks, maybe even months, even if the Russians are very powerful. And to my amazement, I've been watching and following, and I've also been looking just at non-American sources just to double check and to check that we're not just getting a pack of lies. But indeed, it seems that the Ukrainians have been fighting very well. And they're not fantastic, but they seem to be killing a lot of Russians. And I'm absolutely amazed at how much armor has been knocked out. I almost can't believe it, that hundreds of vehicles have been knocked out. Everybody is lying about how many troops have died. I've been trying to figure out how many have died. The best guess that I can come up with is that the Ukrainians maybe have lost 3,000 troops dead, but the Russians may have lost, I think the Russians have lost more. I think they've lost maybe about 5,000 or so dead at least. So the military side was the part that really interested me. The politics is garbage politics because everybody's got Jews on all sides. As you say, Putin's not a racialist, but Putin does have all those oligarchs who are Israeli billionaires and scum around him. But the thing that I must admit started disgusting me is this Jew Zelensky who runs Ukraine. I refer to him as the Jewish penis comedian because of that silly thing, that silly comedy.
Yeah, he was doing a gay skit making fun of Cossacks and the Sasha, I can't get that guy's name right anymore.
Sasha Baron Cohen or whatever.
Exactly.
That disgusting.
He was, Jews always do the same thing. They don't have any different tricks. So, yeah, even if Putin's not a white nationalist, no, that's what matters. What matters from the racial point of view? What's good for whites? And I say it's absolutely black and white. It's Putin cashiering these neocons and getting them the hell out of Ukraine. And I hope he puts out a book documenting the incredible conspiracy. Like all the non-Jews who rise to the top in American politics as the frontsmen, their kids all marry into Jews. And half of them employ. Like making all kinds of money selling influence in the Ukraine. I'd love to see Putin document that and put it out there. I mean, because all we get is a continual gaslighting from Biden and this idiot fronts for him, Psaki or whatever her name is, and then this vile, vile Jew, Newland over at the state. It's he could really do himself a good service by when he wins, just documenting all the corruption. Well, first of all the bio labs over there that they're working on and funding, like in China, like in Wuhan, and then all the graft involved. Trump pointed a lot of them. The irony is they spent 4 years blasting Trump for being, you know, a Russian tool when it's completely the opposite of the case. The Biden and all them were working in the Ukraine. And yeah, they're using that as a base to try to undermine and overthrow Russia and complete their, you know, sexual revolution and eventually create the world slave state. And then mix the whites out of existence. So, I mean, there's no two sides in it at all. I mean, it's sad when whites get killed in Ukraine, but, I mean, he's fighting back against that. They really don't like him. So, they should win. I think they'll win. I think they're making pretty good progress. I mean, I'm not a military historian at all, but I think they're making pretty good progress. It's not overnight, but soon enough, they're going to win. They'll be in control. They're advancing on Kiev right now. So I don't think it'll last a whole heck of a lot longer before Kiev will come to terms.
Another couple of things I heard on this RT report yesterday, doing other stuff, it was just, you know, the radio on in the background. So I don't know if I picked up these things correctly, but they said the US bio labs that allegedly exist in Ukraine, well, they do, don't they? Apparently, yeah. these kinds of laboratories are forbidden. They're illegal on US soil. According to RT, and they've also been reporting the last couple of days of quite considerable capture by the Russians of tanks, rocket fire things, weapons, grenade rocket throwers, all kinds of weaponry and tanks. And it seems that they found quite a lot of identification of these Ukrainian soldiers from the Ukrainian army. And the reportage from Russia Today is saying that all this stuff has been abandoned, including the military clothes, including their tags. The guys have gone onto another victim with a civilian population. What's true and what isn't true?
Well, what's true is they're constantly funding terrorists to undermine these different countries. That's how they produced the election. They overthrew the guy who was legitimate. I don't even remember his name, but back in 2014, they don't really vary what they do. And so, yeah, they're going to send all this munitions over there to create little groups and to help. But ultimately, most of it's going to probably end up in just like with, you know, ISIS and that, which they themselves funded. It's going to end up and they're going to capture it.
Well, it's under lock and key. Apparently, it's all under lock and key. The Russians have sequestered all this stuff.
Yeah, and the thing is, they lie about everything, so no one ever hears the truth in America. I doubt Britain's any different, but
what's his name? O'Connell, Brendan O'Connell. He says it's all Kissinger and Kissinger's best friend Rupert Murdoch. Putin is acting on their orders.
I don't know about if they're in the USA gay, and now it's tranny, and to my understanding, Putin is against that. At least he says he's against it. He's not going to let them promote that stuff in Russia. They've actually taken steps, and the same thing in China. So to me, those people, and of course not in Iran either. So they are fighting back against the global social revolution. So that's the domestic thing that they want in every single country. And they're fighting back, and Zelensky certainly supports that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so that's why I'd be on the side of Putin. But yeah, I have no doubt the USA is doing all kinds of nasty stuff. And yeah, if the losses don't do it in America, then they just sign up with Israel and they do it somewhere else, or they just ignore the law. I mean, I don't know that they follow the United States anymore. I mean,
Alex, they don't. Do we know anything about these bio labs? What exactly are they doing in the bio labs? Because and why are these things illegal in America? Because I would have thought.
I don't know, because I'll tell you all I know, which is not all that much. I used to write about healthcare more or less professionally, and I knew this person who was basically had a sinecure, if you know what that is, just sort of a pretty easy job working for his brother's company. Now this fellow was a PhD, and he was very much into epidemiology about, you know, global pandemics. He was really into that. I'd never met anyone super interested in that, but he thought about it all the time. And he actually believed the world was run by a small dictatorship in the skunk works at MIT, for whatever that's worth. But America has Fort Detrick, and that's where they mess with all of that stuff. Maybe they have other places as well, but they've never had any hesitation to test stuff on American people, right? Whether nuclear, biological, chemical, or whatever. So, yeah, there probably is some kind of a law like that, but I would not be surprised if they didn't pay much attention to it. They just call it something else. But they would also be working abroad. So you see with Fauci that they were funding all that stuff gain of function, they were calling it. So they take some weird disease and try to make it even worse in their lab, and then they're gonna spring it in China and blame the Chinese. I mean, this is exactly how Jews operate everywhere. And then it killed a bunch of people in Iran. Well, who hates Iran? Well, the Jews do. America wouldn't have any problem with Iran. They don't invade other places if it weren't for America being run by Jews. So this is the pattern. And now, are you surprised they would try this? They also don't like China and they don't like Russia. You've also got it again, the American defense establishment, right, that Eisenhower warned about is a trillion-year budget item, right? So they got to, that's the second of the Jew stuff. The Jew stuff is first, but second of that is this defense contract that constantly needs to gin up new enemies. What should have happened in a rational world where Americans ran America and looked out for their interests, when the USSR, that was an actual threat, when they upped the ghost because they couldn't fund it anymore, which hopefully will is an early example of what's going to happen to USSA now. When they quit, NATO should have disbanded, brought all of our soldiers home, as numerous people advised, could have saved a boatload of money and made the world a better place. No, what they did instead was expand NATO from Germany all the way up to the border of Russia and then start instigating these color revolutions like they do in the Middle East in order to make the world digestible for Israel. And that's what's ultimately behind it. People don't want to believe that. You can't say it anywhere. That's what it is. It's Jews trying to, and thank God they used to have control of the USSR. Now they at least have lost some control. People can, of course, that's not black or white, how much control Jews have in Russia, how much influence, if not control over Putin. But to me, if they had control over Putin, he would be pro-gay and pro all the rest of that social agenda like everybody else in any truly Jew-controlled land. And he's not. He's against that stuff. So they can't have complete power in Russia. He has the ability. He has weapons. And this is the base of his confidence that with the hypersonic weapons that have come out or they've talked about the last couple of years. America doesn't have those. China and Russia are developing weapons that are beyond what America has. They can absolutely flatten not only Israel, but all relevant American sites. Now, they would pay too high of a price in return, but they can do that and we can't stop them. Now showing you, hey, here's what's actually up, guy who thinks you're so freaking tough and you're going to lie everywhere and gaslight everybody and foment these revolutions. Guess what? We, for 8 years, since 2014, we've told you, stop fucking doing this. We don't want your nuclear weapons 10 feet away from us. And you haven't listened to us. We've acted like rational adults the whole time. Putin has always been very measured in his and what they say. Now they're saying, okay, you're going to ignore us. Now we're going to act. And we have better weapons than you, and you can't do anything about it. And if they wanted to, they could do what, you know, the communists were always, we were always warned about back in the 50s, whatever. They can roll right through. If they wanted to, they could roll through basically all of Europe, and they could do a damn thing. Germany doesn't even have an army for all practical purposes. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know, maybe UK has nuclear weapons, so does France, but basically no one can stop them. So they could roll into Poland and say, oh, we're reversing NATO. You see, Poland, just a bunch of MiG fighters in the USA is like, no, let's. Well, all their Jewish goddamn bullshit is being called, essentially. Their bluff is being called by Putin. And so I don't know how fast their progress should have been. I see some people say it's very, who are knowledgeable, say it's been very fast. Others say it's been slow, more or less like Jan saying, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure pretty soon they're gonna control it. And I think that is black and white, good for whites, for the white race. And I look at it from the racial point of view. That's kind of the point of the show. I mean,
now, Alex, but if I may ask another question.
Yes.
I understood some years ago that there was some kind of Nazis in the Ukraine, and that even this overthrow. Now, is that true?
Well,
are they white nationalists of some kind?
They, it's hard to tell. They're in the Rovadni or Rovnadni. It's some native religion, which is not Christianity, which in my view, that's good. They're Azov Battalion is what it is. It's maybe 20, but they even have Jews in them. They're working for Jew Zelensky. They're fighting Russia. So they're not racial nationalists. They would be, say, Ukrainian nationalists who are willing to serve a Jew for pay. So to my mind, and I've had people even attack me on one of my sites about this, to my mind, they can call themselves Nazis. I don't really see them that way. Now, there is a history of nationalism in Ukraine that has maybe fought Russia and other places. It's also fought Jews. Petliura and Bandera was fought the Russians. I'm getting him wrong what he did. But there have been Ukrainian nationalists who were anti-Jew. But these guys, I mean, to an extent, they're real. They worked even with people from the USA. But, they'd be Ukrainian nationalists, if you want to say so. Okay, they're going to fight to defend Ukraine. But, you know, most of those people in those two new republics that have been recognized by Putin, those are ethnically, they're Russian. It doesn't matter what they're called. They're Russians. It's the same basic people until you really get it over more in the eastern part. So Putin doesn't want to take over what, by every account I've seen, is basically a pretty miserable state. And not like Russia is a hell of a lot better, but they don't want that. What they don't want is seeing it and attacking them from there and making them insecure and pushing that into Russian territory. And that's what they've been doing the last 8 years. Right. That's what you'll never, ever hear any reports about. They're bombing it and whatever. And that's out of the area where the Azov battalion is. So they're being used by Jews to foment insurrection in Russia, essentially. So I don't think they're any good, even though part of what they believe and the fact that they're nationalists and they're strong. That's fine. Yeah,
they were part of the Maidan regime change operation. Very
nice. Yeah. And that's key. That's what I should have said. And I never followed all that because, you know, once you know Jan, you like the details. I'm focused on the patterns. And that's the main thing that interests me. I'm not a historian. I'm not even particularly interested. I just want to know what the pattern is so I can identify it before it happens in the next one. Yeah. Jews goes into all these countries, the Middle East or over there, and they foment revolutions. And yeah, all this money comes from the USA. They're the ones funding all of this garbage, like whether it's in Syria, Iran, Iraq, or in Russia proper, or in the Ukraine. They fund these, oh, wow, we're having a democratic revolution. It's just a bunch of Jews trying to get a Jew pliable puppet. So, yeah, as Allison is saying, they used Azov to bring about that revolution. But maybe you know more. I remember it. I didn't particularly pay over much attention to it at the time because it's just part of the general chain of them trying to foment the world revolution and knock out all the enemies of Israel, those seven nations, and then expand.
I heard of a while ago already that, you know, when would have been around 2014, that in fact Ukraine was being prepped for when Israel fell. We don't hear much about Israel, do we? I mean, is it... in comparison to what's going on in Ukraine, I mean, you know, this.
Yeah, yes, that's violence. People. You know, people were pointing out that hypocrisy that these. What is Russia doing next to what Israel's been doing for decades? And they never get mad about that at all. No, because the USA is completely a puppet of Israel. And the other states are basically all puppets of the USA, all these European states. And so, you know, when. And they also wanted to kill that Nord Stream 2 that's piping gas into Germany and see breaking them away from the LNG from the USA that's high priced. And it makes more sense to get it from closer Russia for cheaper. But the Germans basically, they're a dead state. Their manhood died in World War II. They were defeated. Now they're essentially castrated psychologically. Well, now that even they are like, oh, we need to get a military back. They have these damn women running all the war making bodies in all of these states. They're just puppet states of the USA. And that just means they're puppets of Jews because Jews are the ones running the USA. And
O'Connell, he also cited quite a recent report on Fox News. And they had some expert on, some PhD. And he was saying, he actually said, all this stuff in Ukraine, it's to keep America in, to keep Germany down, and to keep Russia out.
Yes.
They're afraid. They're afraid that, like I said, like Russia and China and Iran and India are breaking away in the back end, and the base of that would be their financial system. But also, if they could break Germany away, and see, that's why these neocons are so hot to stop that Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Because basically Germany can't run any industry if Russia cuts off the oil. So they are the industrial power. And they basically, if they followed their interests, they'd be hooking up with Russia, not the USA. But because we still have the legacy of World War II and we still have American soldiers over there, they're still, you know, basically weak and oppressed. So they have to rise up. And if they rise up and become defending of their own interests, then they're going to break away. And that'll be so much better for the world. But that's a long way off. But look at what immediately happened. They immediately canceled the put on indefinite hold, the pipeline that was just about done and ready to go. That's what the USA wanted. Well, a large part of it.
This from 2014, Times of Israel, blah, 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 published a fascinating but largely overlooked story, Dateline Jerusalem and Zhytomyr, Ukraine, March the 16th, 2014, written by its respective Russian and Ukrainian correspondents, Hirsch Ostropoller and Ized Grosser-Spass, citing a secret report provided to the Israeli government. The report, written by a secret panel of scholars of Jewish history drawn from academia and other research centres, concluded that European Jews are in fact descended from Khazars, a warlike Mongol-Tatar group that ruled over Ukraine and southern Russia, which mass-converted to Judaism in the 8th century AD. Zionists long argued that the claim, land claimed by Israel, was the biblical birthright to the Jew forced from the land, blah, blah, blah. So I've seen quite a few studies of this. And one of those studies I read from something you sent me about DNA, Jan, not so long ago. It was one of your newsletters. So everything that the West is built on is kind of like built on all this stuff, isn't it? You know, our religion is built on that religion or what you...
Well, they're trying to...
So are they prepping Ukraine? Because Israel, and I think this is another fundamental truth, it was worse than a crime. I mean, the Balfour Declaration, importation into Arab lands of all these refugees, it was worse than a crime. It was a mistake because the Arabs were never going to accept it, and they are never going to accept it.
Good.
So, I mean, you know, people... Israelis who don't care about, you know, religion and stuff, and they've built their lives there, and you go there, it's a very, you know, melting pot of cultures and race and skin. There's of course blue-eyed,
I think they flee to the USA.
Is this something? I mean, can you imagine? I mean, you'd have biolabs as...
A lot of them came from there originally. They were communists. They were punks. And then they disliked the USSR revolution after a point, after, you know, Stalin in the 50s. And then they got special privilege to leave there over others who wanted to leave what they had built, which they later denied it was them. But I don't think they would go back there. I think they would. No, they don't want to go to a backwater. They would come to America or go to some rich place like to Poland. It may be, but it's like economically, I don't think it's that. It's that great because it's more southern, so they got a little more than the northern Russia part. But I think they'd flee to America or South America or something.
That's I remember at school they taught us the Ukraine was the breadbasket of Russia.
Well, supposedly it has more topsoil than like anywhere in the world, or like 9 feet of it or something.
And you see the Black Sea. I mean, it's in summer, absolutely gorgeous.
Oh yeah,
absolutely
no doubt.
Beautiful.
If I may,
see, they could have had all they had all that when they're in the USSR. They even tried to set up a whole Jewish, like essentially state within a state on what is the Amur River or something over there. They didn't want to move there. They don't want to be farmers. They want to be middlemen and do what they've always done. So
yes.
Oh, they'll always run somewhere else if it absolutely comes to it. But Israel has nuclear weapons, so.
Well,
they're not going to take their nuclear weapons with them when they go wherever. I mean, that's it. It's not going to, I mean.
Oh, I think if they got to the point now, they'd fire them, and they'd fire them at European capitals. They've said as much. They hate whites. That's what's behind the whole point of it, is they're trying to destroy whites. There's literally quotes from Israelis, you can find that. Yeah, we're going to breed them brown and breed them out and destroy their thousand years old culture and create a global slave state, essentially. That's what they're trying to do. And people don't want to accept that. I mean, the American public, but it's pretty obvious when you look at their agenda and you see what happens. I mean, you don't have to think about anything. You just look and say, well, what does a person have in mind who puts in all these policies? It could only lead to these ends. Well, they obviously intend that. It doesn't take a lot of intelligence to see where all their social policies lead. And of course, then you look at Israel, they have exact opposite.
You see the transition from, you know, the COVID pot yep. and pan bashes, the vaxxed, the great vaxxed against those who are, you know, challenging the COVID narrative. Then in a single breath, it went from COVID to war, and oh, we've got to welcome all these refugees, and oh, isn't it terrible, and oh, isn't Putin an evil man, and
oh yeah,
people are just so easily manipulated by to have an emotional response, and it's just like a playground full of children that, you know, saying yeah, yes, let's be slaves.
Absolutely,
keep on doing it to us. No self-reflection, no self-awareness.
Well, I don't know how many people in the UK, but in the US, I guarantee you not 1 in 100, and probably 1 in 1,000 could even identify Ukraine on a, and it's a pretty big country on a map. Yeah. No way. They're completely ignorant. It's all TV, just, oh, now I feel bad for Ukraine. Putin is Hitler, blah, blah, blah. And they do buy it, most of them, because most of them are watching TV eight hours a day, basically in America. So
if I may say something, I originally had quite a positive view of the Ukraine because of a couple of things. Because the Ukraine is where the Holodomor took place. That's where the Jews starved the people to death in the time of the Soviet Union.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
And the other things I will tell you that gave me a positive...
But, I mean, what kind of dummies are going to vote for a Jew like Zelensky when they know the Jews did that to them all those decades ago? It's got to be within the living memory of some of them. It's only like the 30s.
Maybe, right? Maybe some of those people don't even know, you know, it's possible. So the other thing that gave me a positive view of the Ukraine was, if you remember Ernst Zundel, his wife was Ingrid, and mm-hmm. Ingrid actually was born in the Ukraine. And there was a talk by Ernst where he interviewed Ingrid, and she spoke about how she grew up in the Ukraine, how the German Wehrmacht came in, and how everybody was so happy to be with the German Wehrmacht. And she also said that lots of Germans from Germany over a number of centuries had settled in the Ukraine. And they were quite happy there in the Ukraine. Then when and Alex, there are, I also came across something a long time ago. I need to go and hunt for it again. But I have seen actual photos. The only photos that I've ever seen of Jews being killed is Ukrainian civilians killing Jews in the streets. I've seen that. That is genuine. It's something yeah. when the Germans arrived, the Ukrainians were already killing some of the Jews, civilians, the Jews that were living among them. It's not the Germans who were killing them. The civilians were killing them. They were beating them and so forth. But what Ingrid told a fascinating story about how when the German army was retreating, how lots of them retreated with the German army. And she and her family, they retreated with the German army all the way back into Germany. The German army looked after them for those final years, and how grateful they were for that. So it seemed to me that there were quite a few Germans in the Ukraine, and the Ukraine seems to be quite a wealthy place. But you know, Alex, the other day that the penis Jew comedian.
Well, it's wealthy in potential. It's not wealthy in reality. But yeah, remember Hitler. I was just reading yesterday in Mein Kampf. Hitler was saying when he wrote Mein Kampf, Germany. He was increasing like 900,000 a year. And basically they need living space. It's too cramped in Germany. There's not good enough. And that's where they were going to go. He says, like, that's the only real place we can go is to the east in yes. Russia. And I'm assuming he means Ukraine as part of that. And yeah, there were loads of Germans that had been brought in by Catherine the Great, and they lived along the river, and they were happy, successful farmers, as German people always are, everywhere they've gone in the world, literally South America, like my ancestors here in North America, everywhere they've gone, they've been very, very good farmers and basically stayed out of politics. So, Ukraine run by the right people could be very immensely profitable. But as I understand it, economically, it is very much not a great place.
Yes.
But adding a bunch of faggotry is not going to make things better, right?
And it's not. And I will agree with you. I've kind of picked up that there's something like 500,000 Jews living in the Ukraine now. So, you know, 500,000 Jews is enough to
One of their big locations. Yeah. No, the Pale of Settlement was somewhere around there, but there were a lot of Jews, massive Jews in Poland, Ukraine, and Russia. This is where most, because of their multiplication, that's where most Jews are from. Now, that coast is interesting, actually pertains to what Allison said. For all history, right, they could only articulate what a Jew was religiously. So it's someone who rejects Jesus. The Catholic Church goes so far as to say that's what defines Jews, i.e. they deny biology and just say, well, if Jews convert, then that solves all the problems. They're only they're spiritual revolutionaries because they reject Jesus. But as we grew in scientific understanding, the people always understood, no, the problem is their traits, the way they are. Essentially as like animal characteristics, the way we are and they are different. People understood that. They couldn't articulate it. Now, 1800 and 1900, you develop science, nations of things. That's where the term anti-Semitism came for, an attempt to articulate and distinguish a racial view from a religious objection to Jews, turn that into something. No, the problem is racial. Now, Koestler is the one who came up with that, Khazar, in the mid-centuries and wrote a book trying to say, oh, no, the problem is with Jews isn't racial. They're actually really just Ukrainian, so they're the same race as you, is ultimately what his mentality was. But when they've studied their genes, I think they basically disproved that. They are about 30%. Yeah, they are. Jews are about 30% European because they are Ashkenazi, but basically they're a state within a state that bred with among itself.
Okay.
So they are different racially.
Okay, Alex, I did an exercise with my old African Crisis website, and I pulled out all my old articles and got them into a database where I can search them and so forth and look at them and see what I had. And I had 110,000 articles from my old website, and I was looking through them, and I want to try and put them on a new website over the next 2 months. But I've got some things for you, Alex, that might be of interest to you. I may have the only actual prediction that I've ever found where I can show you a prediction of 9/11 before 9/11 happened. And that prediction came from, of all places, the Russians. But I want to first do a short video about that. Maybe we can discuss it then in another Team White. But I got one for today. And I stumbled on this when I was just sort of browsing around the other day. Listen to this. This, what I'm about to read to you, was published on the 20th of February, 2004, a year after the invasion of Iraq. And it comes from Pravda. And it says the following. Pravda, World War III by 2015. And this is the article. Russia must be ready for fighting on its territory. This is continuous fighting against the international terrorism, against the American military machine, that may break out before 2015, and fighting against China's armed forces that may start in 2030. The modern permanent world war is remarkable. And by the way, that 2015 might not be bad, because what about Donbass and that other place in the Ukraine, with all that Ukrainian Jew overthrowing stuff that happened in 2014. So, I mean, this could be a prediction of that. So let me just continue reading. It says, the modern permanent world war is remarkable for its aggressive, merciless, global, systematic, and network nature. The war is being waged according to various unprincipled methods, and it will be further waged with application of all possible resources, including weapons of mass destruction, even though there are no formal reasons, causes, and legal grounds for this aggression. The war is being waged only depending on US's decisions and its readiness for the war. What is more, we already observe results of the continuous strategic transfer of America's military power into its political and economic effectiveness. Russia's national elites, mass media, institutions of the government, and civil society are the basic weapon of war against Russia. So it's like they are turning the Russians against Russia. And by the way, this article, the author of this article is a Russian general, by the way. So let me just carry on. National historical values of Russia, the values of collective existence, have transformed the values of individual survival, determined their anti-national activity. Some of this is a bit hard to read. Only Russia's adequate military power and activity of the nation aimed to preserve its own culture and state system may prevent this progress of events. From a strategic point of view, this means that Russia must be ready for straight armed fighting on the national territory. This is continuous fighting against the international Islamic terrorism, against the American military machine that may break out before 2015, and fighting against China's armed forces that may start in 2030. We're down to the last paragraph or two. This is strategic timing meant for all activities of the governmental army reforming and other national projects. The conclusion gives a list of types and the scale of wars for participation in which Russia and the Russian armed forces must be ready. The war against international terrorism will continue as a rebellious war of the Chechen and Palestinian types. A war against the USA will be a struggle of high-tech military systems. A war against China will require big and modern land forces, as this will consist of defensive and offensive operations meant to protect Russia's territories along the eastern borders. Readiness of the country and the nation for these wars is the maximal scope of problem that Russia and the Russian society must settle within adequate periods of time. The author of this is the Vice President of the Collegium, retired Major General Alexander Vladimirov. So isn't that quite a strange thing, hey, Alex, that seems to have value after all these years fighting on Russian soil?
They know what the Allies have done in the past in World War One, and look at where they are. They're a huge country, and then they've got China, which they're on good terms with now, but China has 10 times as many people as Russia does. It's like 1.4 billion versus like 140 to 150 million. And China has a vast need for the resources of the type that, you know, Russia has, and could easily just spill over and take it by virtue of needing it and having more people and needing, like what Germany needs, more living room. But right now, you know, I think China's population is probably headed down rather than up. But I'm not sure Russia's population is headed up either. But anyway, they're in good terms. We need to have some – build the new world based on hard money is the most positive thing we can say that may be starting to happen. And that's why I get Bitcoin. And this will promote Bitcoin, because we've seen – what has happened with Russia and in Canada. In Canada, they started freezing the bank accounts of people who were donating money to the truckers rally, right? So if you do anything they don't like politically, they can freeze your account. And that's when we have paper money. but we're now going to be moving the next few years from paper money into purely digital money. Well, if digital money is just software, is just technology, it can be upgraded. It can be used to track everything that you do. So potentially every step of your life might involve making a decision that they decide is against what they want, against their politics or against their agenda for your life. And they might freeze you out of everything because they can do that with technology. And they've already gone a long way to creating that within China, which is, you know, more or less a one race people, a one race nation. So this is what's coming. And the way around it is to get some Bitcoin. And then we saw with Russia, the minute Russia did something they didn't like, well, then they're basically deplatforming it across the board in terms of any economic involvement with the rest of the world that they control. Now, they don't control China, so they can't stop Russia and China are strong together, but they, Western Europe, at the behest of the USA, is more or less cutting ties with Russia. So this is, it's just complete totalitarianism like we've never, technologically backed totalitarianism like we've never seen before. There's just more possibilities for control, but also on the flip side, there's more possibilities for decentralization, which is, amounts to as much liberation as you'll ever get in this world, like they're trying to build down in El Salvador, you know, with making Bitcoin the basis of kind of a new civilization, starting with the city. And then Lugano, Bitcoin legal for paying to other services there, the third biggest city in Switzerland, I think. Switzerland's a famous, you know, banking center. So the world is kind of going two ways at once. One of them is very tiny and appears insignificant, but really it's huge in potential. And the other way appears to be huge, but is also declining because of its inherently criminal nature based on criminal money. So it's very, very interesting.
Yeah. Alex, I want to just talk a bit about, you asked about some of the stuff from the South African viewpoint. When everybody was criticizing Russia, the South African government also started criticizing Russia. And Putin very quickly told the black South Africans, he reminded them that Russia helped to fight against apartheid, and that the only reason these blacks are in power is because of Russia. So the blacks are now jumping around, and they are reshaping their discussion. They've been trying not to be pro-Russia, and they've even tried to sort of be neutral. But Russia's kind of saying to them, remember that, you know, we brought you power. You see, one of the things that the blacks need that I must tell you about is in the past, when I was reading about various military history, President Nixon, in his book, in his brilliant book, The Real War, that he wrote after he was kicked out, Nixon made a very interesting point, because Nixon defended the existence of South Africa. And Nixon said that these violent black terrorists in Africa, they have got a deal with the Russians and Chinese. And the deal is that if they need weapons, if the blacks in Africa need weapons, the West will not sell them weapons without good reason. But they have a deal with the Russians and Chinese that any time they want weapons, they just snap their fingers and the Russians and Chinese will sell them weapons with no strings attached and no questions asked. And on African Crisis in about 2000, when Robert Mugabe was busy destroying the white farmers in Zimbabwe, he immediately placed several orders for equipment from Russia and from China. And I remember the one order was for 21,000 AK-47s. And he placed the order, and the Russians flew the 21,000 AKs in with planes immediately. And then he went and he put in some other orders for heavier weapons and stuff from China. So the thing about these blacks is that these blacks who rule us are now in quite a strange position. On the one hand, about 90% of our trading of South Africa, about 90% of our trading is with the West. But the blacks know that they need guns, because if they need to fight us or they want to arm their people to come and kill the whites, they need weapons and they need it fast. And the only place that they will get it is Russia and China. So the blacks have to, because of that weapon supply thing, that is a critical thing for the black bastards who rule us. So that is the, and you must remember, there is a little bit of a crybaby thing involved in this as well. Is if you go back 60 years, 60, 70 years, the Soviet Union, when the Jews were running the Soviet Union, the Soviet Union was busy bringing terrorism everywhere. And they were trying to create communist revolutions everywhere. And can you believe somebody's trying to phone me here? Hell, there's a guy. I must tell him not to do this, man. If he finds me again, I'll just kill it. So the thing is that these Soviets, they went and destroyed all the empires of Europe, including the British Empire, by arming up the locals with weapons. And that's where you get the Vietnam War, the revolutions in China, all that sort of stuff, all the wars that happened in Africa, South America, Latin America, and even the Middle East. So you had the Soviet Union under Jewish control, and it was expanding everywhere and trying to kill everybody and destroy Western empires. And they were mainly out to destroy the European empires. America sat on the side and laughed at the Europeans as the Europeans were battling and losing all their empires. But now what's happened is that, it's like America and the Jews are back. The Jews are now on the other side. The Jews are now on America's side. Now they're busy with a new kind of terrorism and globo homo terrorism. And they're busy with all kinds of crap everywhere. So it's almost like America's now hitting back. So there is a little bit and the other thing to also keep in mind about the Russians, that I don't fully have full sympathy with the Russians, is that keep in mind that the Soviet Union was on the doorsteps of Europe, and that even before Hitler invaded Poland, that the Russians had invaded Finland, the Russians had invaded Lithuania and other places. The Russians had invaded a whole bunch of little white countries and had gotten right to the borders of Poland as they were preparing for their long-term plan to knock Hitler. And after World War II, also keep in mind that the Russians took over half of Europe. You know, half of Europe was under communist control, Soviet communist control from Moscow for 50 years until 1989. And you know, Alex, people who've lived in that part of Europe, in East Germany, in Bulgaria, in Romania, let them tell you about life under communism. They hated it. We've got some Bulgarians in South Africa. And there's a Bulgarian that I'm going to still introduce you to. No. So, I mean, you know, the Russians weren't crying when they owned half of Europe and they had terrorists. And the Russian army fought the South African army here in Africa, in Angola. So, you know, the Russians also mustn't be total crybabies, because they spent many decades trying to stir up communist revolution for the Jews everywhere in the world, you know. So
yeah, I agree, and I'm against that. I just think now they're it's different. They're not, if they were still doing that kind of communist agitation, of course I'd be against them like I was in the 80s, but I see them as different now. I think what they're doing is a legitimate act of self-defense. And okay. That's why I support it. And more than that, because from the racial point of view, they are actually standing up to physically, as I've been advising all these years, the only thing they understand is force. And these goddamn Jews trying to overthrow all these countries and eventually the world, someone to them. And Putin actually has the ability to do that and is doing that. So I'm trying to describe how a counterforce to the Jews can arise. I fully stipulate to the USSR being terrible in every possible way from the perspective of Africa, America, and Europe. 100% agree.
All right. Well, the other.
I've never been to Russia. Nor when it was the Soviet Union. I've been to Germany a lot, and I've been to quite a few countries in East Germany. I've been to Bulgaria. I've been to Romania. Croatia, Slovenia, all along the Danube there. I've been to all those countries. And go on, Jan.
I've been to East Germany when it was communist.
Yeah.
I caused a police incident.
The people, even now, they'll say, yeah, but, you know, it wasn't that bad. We had things, and there were things about their society that they realized the curtain fell. That they realized that were good about their society. There was less divorce, less depression, of course, less degeneracy, less noise, less neon lights, yeah. And all this. They had things, and yeah,
they had a certain social solidarity. I think that was born because the communist revolution was so tenuous that they had to clamp down so hard. They were so scared of losing it that I think they locked it in. And then they kept it that way for decades and generations. I had a German professor in college, and he would always say that East Germany was like Germany used to be like several decades earlier, apart from the communist bullshit and the nasty, nasty brown coal pollution in East Germany, which is almost the most notable thing. The brown coal they use, just terrible pollution. And I lived in L.A. in the 70s, which was also bad, but not that bad. But yeah, it kind of locked them in. But later, the Jews took that permanent revolution through the Frankfurt School. The Jews, Hitler kicked out of Europe into America, and they came up with a different, softer way of doing it so that eventually they had somewhat lost power in the Soviet Union. So now they're going at it in this so-called open society way that is in a way just as totalitarian, but it involves mixing the races and just promoting the aberrant sex. Whereas the communists was more pure authoritarian, and they even tried at the start to do some of that sexual revolutionary stuff with free divorce and free love. I don't think they ever promoted homosexuality quite as until Weimar. And remember, they always thought that the real first revolution would be in Germany that would kick it off for the rest of the world. Russia wasn't technically advanced, yet they were able to acquire power in Russia. So I think that's more of a historical accident, but what you're saying is accurate. They were like more social solidarity. They did miss even when the wall came down, but I think that's more or less accidental rather than intentional on the Jewish communist part.
Okay. Well, the one area where I do think that lots of good things can come is the economic war, as you've said. That economic war, I think, is going to make things really crazy. Well, here in South Africa, we're already seeing a lot of inflation, and we're seeing all kinds of stupid side effects. We might, Alex, we might even be without electricity. I'm not kidding with
Jesus
you,
Christ,
because because you know what's happening now, the black stuff is so fragile. But what I do agree with you, Alex, is the system needs to break. Things need to break and fall apart. This fucking anti-white fucking system that all of us live under, that is crushing the life out of us. This fucking thing needs to break apart. And so I do see the Ukraine war, and especially this wild sanctions thing as very excellent, especially this tit for tat stuff, you know. So they put all these fucking sanctions on the Russians, and the Russians are grabbing there, or the Russians are hitting back at them. And some of those things that the Russians are doing could be enormous because, you know, I mean, you're talking a proper country with a serious amount of clout. And if you go and you shut down the Russian banks and things, the Russians have still got, you know, Putin had been testing his own internet. Putin can switch the country off the internet if he needs to. He did run tests last year. So Putin's got his gold. He's got all the things that he needs, and he's got all the resources he needs. And one of the things that I saw also that could be huge, I actually hope Putin does this, is he was saying that they might start ignoring copyright law. So if these guys were to say, for example, hack Windows and other operating systems or various other things, and if they could make it freely available to the rest of the world, you know, stuff like that could cause all kinds of chaos, and it would hit these freaking billionaires. So, you know, this tit for tat thing, over and above the fact that it's sending prices through the roof, this could be very interesting. Now, in the case of South Africa, where our system is so fragile, it just needs a little bit more of a push, and it could come down, and I truly wish it would, is the blacks are still battling 150 years after electricity was commercialized and people were having lights in streets in Europe and America. We're still struggling to create electricity as if it's brand new. Anyway, so the blacks are still battling with our coal-powered nuclear power stations. We do have one. We have one nuclear-powered station, but the rest of our power stations are coal-powered, and it's the coal-powered ones that are producing most of our power. And those are the ones that are broken. Some parts of it have collapsed. Some parts of it have blown up. Other projects are unfinished because of all the graft. But anyway, we're battling at the moment. And the only way that they were able to generate the extra power for the power that they are short of is they bought special kinds of generators that function on diesel. And we are using 9 million liters of diesel every day in order to generate excess power. Mm. But now the price of diesel is about to shoot through the roof. Yeah. So,
hey,
so,
Allison, let me ask you, Allison, where does England, one of the big things here is Germany. Mike Whitney is one of these longtime leftist writers, wrote that the main thing is to detach Germany. Germany view, as I was talking about earlier. I don't know if it got cut off or not, but I'm presuming England gets most of its energy from the North Sea oil. You guys don't import a bunch, do you?
I think we did get, I think it was like 17. I heard some statistics yesterday, but I didn't write them down. I didn't tell.
No, but I mean, like, you guys share that with Norway, something like that?
I might be
wrong about that.
Well, in some of the fields, maybe further by the Orkneys, etc. I really don't know.
It's got to be something like that, because I never read about like UK importing oil. It's always like Germany is importing. You know, they got these pipelines. They got one that comes up from the south and maybe goes through Ukraine, and then Nord Stream 2 is more over in the Baltic Sea, down in the North Sea into Germany. And they had just more or less completed that, and it's been a big deal of the neocons to get that stopped. Trying to use this old idiot Biden, who's, you know, falling apart mentally, and he finally, okay, we're going to quit trying to get you to stop it. Then immediately this Ukraine thing happens, and the first thing Germany does, okay, well, we're going to stop that now, even though it's completed, and there are all but the last segment or the turn on is completed, and then we're going to indefinitely suspend that. Meanwhile, Germany has decommissioned all of its nuclear stations, right, or its last three nuclear stations, so it's trying to go all power and wind, like the lefty Greens wants, and everybody knows there's not enough of that to sustain anything. And over here, they're trying to push all the cars. So I was just idly wondering.
Yeah,
I guess France and England, where do they get their oil and stuff? I never hear them mentioned, only Germany in that regard.
Yeah, but we produce 19th in the world oil production, 1 million barrels a day, just over 1 million barrels a day. But we consume about 1.58 million.
Okay, so it's manageable. You can import them from Norway or something, or buy them from someone else. But like, see, the USA,
there was something from Russia. I mean, Boris Johnson, he's got all these. Mm-hmm. Basically, they funded Brexit and Boris Johnson, all his oligarch pals. There's huge outcries on the left in Britain about all the oligarchs, Abramovich, etc. Yeah.
So they opened up Russia and they stole it blind. And they were basically a bunch of Jews who came over from Harvard, like Jeffrey Sachs. And then they told them to open it up. And then it goes supposedly free market. But it's just they took all the state reserves and basically a bunch of rich Jews got them. Then they brought soccer teams in the UK and other places. And those are Abramovich and all those boys. And so Putin is somewhat, he's better than that. I mean, he's not completely untied for it, but at least he put a few of them in jail. So the fact that he's opposing this social agenda that is just destroying America, that tells me that he's not completely in control. I don't know how to put any finer on that. I simply don't know enough about Russia to say beyond that.
I think no, you're orthodox, right. Yeah. I also
he is an Orthodox Christian. I hate Christianity,
and a lot of Muslim communities, and you've got the Chechens, etc. I think they are very, 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 very proud of their traditions and their culture and their heritage in all these little areas, and they keep their traditions, and they do. When the war began there a couple of weeks ago, Putin announced that next August there's going to be the world's first international anti-fascist conference in Moscow.
And they've taken to the West, and I mean, you can't really blame them for calling now everybody who's bad is Hitler, every individual is a Hitler, and every party is fascist. If whoever hates him on either side it's utterly absurd. But what are you going to do? I mean, if you can at least point to Azov and say, it's not me calling them Nazis, they call themselves Nazis. Nazis that fight for a Jew, it seems kind of weird to me, a little bit sketchy, but
because it's ridiculous to associate Zelensky with Nazis. I mean, he's such a nice Jew.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the world we live in now. They're going to call everything anti-fascist, but, I mean, and then you got Poland also is another one that is trying to protect itself. And one of the few places, if you watch TV streams online from Poland and see their commercials, they're like all white people and they're more or less normal, and they still have media that's owned by whites, and it's basically Catholic, and the Jews are working very hard to overthrow that, but they have not succeeded. E. Michael Jones and Culture Wars have written about that. So you got the Catholic and some Orthodox who are willing to defend basic sexual normality, or sort of Western idea of a man, woman, children, and family, and hey, let's promote every aberrant form of sex out there. And how strong that is, I don't know. But the fact it's by God, you wouldn't find one politician in the USA who would stand up and say anything against pedophilia. And I'm not kidding. It's really is that bad and sick. That degenerate. Yeah,
absolutely.
And it's a sick freaking world. And we got to build something, get away from it to the extent we can. And I keep emphasizing, you've got to get some Bitcoin, because this hopefully, and we don't, what else do we have to bet on? It's going to be the basis of a new system and heart. And if you have a little bit of that, it's going to go a long, long, long way in your life, in your family's life, in your little platoon, right, as a conservative called it, that makes up the coming eventual racial nation state. That's what we're working for. That's what we need. But that's funny. So I never thought of where France gets all of its energy. That's another question. I don't know. My impression is, Norway sustains itself, and it's incredible socialism is sustained by its oil fields and the benefits that flow from that, kind of like Alaska. But over here in the U.S., there's so many restrictions. I used to talk to my uncle about this a lot. I've mentioned he had found what was developed into a gold mine. Just hearing him talk about the incredibly, 10-year process to get to actually do something. And you see the Biden or they won't let these people just get the oil that we need. We import a lot of stuff from Russia, and now he's made that illegal, as I understand, in the last like 48 hours. So these leftists don't care because they want everybody driving an electric car or not having a car at all. And they really, they hate average working white people so much. They would love to see them paying $10 a gallon for gas, like I guess you do in a lot of Europe. And they, we have that oil here in the USA and Canada, in our possessions in Alaska or in Canada, the far north, and they don't want us to be able to get to it. So they're perfectly willing to screw the US economy. And so I don't know. I don't see any future for the USA. France. Yeah, for France, I don't know.
It says major oil assets of French oil companies located in the North Sea, Africa, and Latin America. French imports, they have to import a million barrels a day, come primarily from Saudi Arabia and Norway, followed by the United Kingdom, Iraq,
what am I thinking?
Iraq, Iran, Nigeria, and Russia.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Of course, because Europe is just across the sea from
Maybe a little bit
to the west, but it's just north of Saudi Arabia and all that. So, of course, they would import it from there. That'd be the history. And then they'd develop other sources over time from Russia or from Norway and the North Sea. Yeah. And then they got the U.S. supplying high dollar, what is it, liquid natural gas, LNG or something. That's what the U.S. wanted to replace what Germany was going to get in the Nord Stream deal. So that lies behind a lot of this U.S. involvement over there as well. The Dick Cheney, if you remember back 20 years ago under Bush, they wanted to get into that whole general region because they knew there was a lot of tapped oil and other stuff over there. And that's why they were also part of the reason, along with Israel's interest of fomenting wars over there to get control of it.
Yeah, one good thing about the war is that it's shut Greta up.
What did Putin call her? The poorly informed teenager. That was awesome. Greta needs a spanking and be sent to bed, maybe with a hot dog to chew on or something. Poor girl doesn't look like she eats enough. Yeah, I will do not mind not hearing from her for 40 or 50 years. My goodness. But she, of course, was just as simply a put-up job like all these clowns. They're purely manufactured by somebody who has connections in the business. And then they see her, oh, your kids are cute. Can we fill her with some leftism and put her on the stage? You know, that's how all that operates. Everybody, I think, is pretty much aware of that garbage, like everything you see in the media.
I like that analysis of keeping Germany down, because surely this is, you know, like even NATO and America in Europe, the Europeans have always had the ability to defend themselves. Why does America need to be there? It doesn't need to be there. And why can't the Europeans determine their own future? And to me, it looks like it's still that case of keeping Germany down. And have you heard of
repeating itself? Not wanting.
How they don't have to be kept down that much longer. They're not even breeding. All these countries have, you know, under 1.5 breeding numbers basically, and then they bring in Syrians. You know, one more generation will do it. You never know. You never know. They can regrow if they get the right conditions. They will do exactly what happened under Hitler. They'll suddenly, oh, my God, we're working together as a racial team, and we need all whites to do that, and their nations will absolutely flourish again. No doubt about it.
A Ukrainian woman I know, she told me she's got a flat in Kiev, and she rents it to Somalis. Well, maybe this kind of thing, you know, they'll have to go back to Ukraine because, you know, the problem, isn't it? You know, you come to England to make money, but in fact, it's all being funneled elsewhere and not assisting the preservation, really. Anyway, I don't know. But yeah, all to do with the oil as well, isn't it? That Germany was becoming increasingly dependent on Russian oil, and consequently they had more economic relations, etc. So, yeah, the EU doesn't like that. Of course, the big EU doesn't like that.
But see, look from the white point of view, and need them to be ripped away and join with Russia, because they're not going to be threatening other people the way the West, so-called, which is just America and just Jews, when you get down to it, is threatening all these other places. So, yeah, Gerhard Schroeder, the former prime minister, was the one who basically facilitated that deal for the pipelines, the Nord Stream ones. Yeah. So, you know, and Germany's got all that industrial stuff in the Ruhr, I guess, that area of it. But, hey, you know, these little countries, I was going to say stupid little countries, but that would not be fair. Formerly greater countries need to stop following America's lead and get their balls and start looking out for the interests of the actual European people. But of course, I can say that about America too. You know, it's my fault as much as anyone's, and we all got to do better and see to it that our race is protected in our own country. It's insane.
And, well, Alex,
very disgusting.
Maybe this fighting will also be the beginning of pushing nationalism rather than globalism. Maybe it'll bring out a bit more of that.
Yeah, I mean, what is global? Look where I am. I'm in the middle of America. Do you think anyone here knows or cares the slightest bit about Russia or Ukraine? They don't. It has no effect on our lives. Why would we know or care about it? This is all the people at the top using our white nations to carry out their Jewish agenda. That's all it is.
So, Alex, do you want to wind up?
Thanks to you all for listening to us. This was a true Tricontinental Report. We were delighted to have Allison back and hear that she's out of jail from these jerks who keep persecuting her. She's a true martyr for our time. So thanks, Allison, for being with Jan and I. We really appreciate it. And I know the listeners do too.
Thanks very much.
And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites.